took office last year. Chinese human rights lawyers and activists have experienced one of the worst crackdowns in recent memory. In January, well-known human rights lawyer Su Juyong was convicted of disturbing public order for attempting to hold a protest demanding equal education rights for children of migrant workers. He received 4 years in prison. On March 14th, the world woke to learn that rights activist Cao Shunli died of tuberculosis while in police custody. Her supporters allege that she was denied medical treatment and was abused in the detention center. What caused the police to detain her? Advocating for civil society and citizens' involvement in China's drafting of its reports for the UN's Universal Periodic Review and of its National Human Rights Action Plan. To put in perspective what exactly is happening on the ground in China and why, is Professor Eva Pills, a professor of law at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. In 2006, Professor Pills wrote the seminal article on human rights lawyers in China, Asking the Tiger for His Skin, Rights Activism in China. This summer, Professor Pills will continue her work with a book on rights activism entitled China's Human Rights Lawyers, Advocacy and Resistance. Thank you for joining us today, Professor Pills. Let's start with a little bit of background. So these human rights lawyers, who are most frequently referred to as rights defense or rights defending lawyers, when did they first start to emerge and why?
Thank you. I think that they used to call themselves rights defense or Wei Quan lawyers, but I think that actually over the past 1 or 2 years, they've started preferring the term Ren Quan Lushi, which means human rights lawyers. And that's in a way related to how they emerge. They emerge because in the post-Mao era, especially from the 1990s onward, it became possible to use the law to defend rights. For one thing, of course, because there was law, and it was only under the Deng Xiaoping reform and opening policies that law became an accepted tool of governance by the party state, after it had been completely denounced as a, well, in essence, as a kind of counter-revolutionary idea in the last decade under Mao Zedong. And then the other thing is that there was a period in the 1990s when the party state authorities were essentially encouraging the use of law to address certain kinds of disputes, certain kinds of conflict in society. And during my time, Wei Quan, rights defense, was actually an officially promoted term. As background, I suppose one should have to say that rule by law, yifa zhiguo, was an idea that the authorities were making use of in the Deng Xiaoping era in order to claim political legitimacy, and that in a way replaced the political legitimacy coming from the idea of a communist revolution that was the pattern what legitimate political legitimacy was based on in the Mao Zedong era. So I think that argument is quite right. This is how Deng Xiaoping wanted to develop China in the post-Mao era. But also, I think that the authorities, perhaps including Deng Xiaoping, didn't fully realize what they were letting themselves in for when they promoted the idea of Wei Quan. So in that sense, perhaps it's because they were quite good Marxist-Leninists and believed sincerely that law was nothing other than a tool of governance to be used by the ruling power. Whereas, of course, from a Wei Quan, a rights defense perspective, it is connected to justice, and it's connected also potentially at least to political resistance through the idea of rights, of human rights. And I think that it's a step towards a more explicit political agenda that the lawyers who used to be referred to as Wei Quan lawyers have now chosen to call themselves human rights lawyers.
And in terms of the political agenda and the agenda of the human rights lawyers in China, in terms of their issues, is there something that unifies them as a single issue, or are they different issues? And in general, are they located in one area, or do you find them throughout the country?
I think in terms of area, yeah, definitely. There's a huge concentration in Beijing, and perhaps also in a couple of other cities, in particular Guangzhou, and of course also Shanghai and so on. But when you look at how they work and where they work, it's very important to see that they really work all across the country. And of course, for instance, the Jianzhanjiang case that you mentioned just before, where you have a couple of human rights lawyers going to this extremely remote location in Heilongjiang with the purpose of freeing, or in any case, providing legal support to a couple of people who are extra legally detained there. That's a perfect example of what human rights lawyers do, regardless of where they are based. Is there something that unifies them? Well, my impression, having done so many hundreds of interviews over the past couple of years with, I suppose, a few dozen human rights lawyers, they're very diverse, they're very different in terms of their personalities, their approach to their work, some of their convictions. But of course, there are things that do unite them, and I think that, for one thing, they see themselves as adopting different methods from what many other lawyers are prepared to do, and for instance, they reject the idea of sort of wining and dining the officials concerned in their client's case to get results. In that, they're not different from a group of lawyers called Kerpai lawyers, lawyers who are sort of very uncompromising. But what sets them apart from the Kerpai lawyers is that they are willing to take on cases that nobody else would want to touch. And I suppose that, one good example for that is the cases of people who practice Falun Gong. And then maybe thirdly, they have recently started identifying more clearly around political ideas. They want democracy.
Okay. So just in terms of the crackdowns that we're seeing, and I think you talked a little bit about this in your previous answer, there has always been crackdowns on dissent in the People's Republic of China, even in the post-Mao era. I mean, you see the 1978 Democracy Wall movement, there's a crackdown. You see the Tiananmen protest in 1989, there's a crackdown. Should we be surprised that the same Chinese Communist Party is looking to crack down on these rights defense lawyers and activists?
No, we should not be surprised. And I don't think that, I don't think that the lawyers are surprised either. And I say that although I just said that initially in the 1990s there was this official promotion of and use of the idea of rights defense, there was, I think, for some a couple of years, especially sort of around 2003 when you had the famous Sun Jiugang incident, this notion that perhaps rights defense could mean a kind of bold group of courageous lawyers, legal professionals, legal academics sympathizing with them, persuading the state to introduce these incremental reforms. One of them, for instance, could have been to introduce some sort of meaningful constitutional adjudication, whichever mechanism that would have used, it would have made a potentially very great contribution towards making constitutional rights guarantees more effective in actual people's lives and in actual legal practice in China. So you have that hope. And of course, along with it, an expectation that the state would tolerate Wei Quan. But actually, very early on, from the moment almost when they started being successful, these Wei Quan lawyers also encountered repression. And I think we now understand better than perhaps a couple of years ago that that was really based in high level perception that Wei Quan presented a political challenge, and that consequently it had to be controlled. What has been happening since beginning in 2004, and especially over the past couple of years, has been a tightening of control and the use of increasingly frightening ways of trying to stop lawyers from engaging in Wei Quan. And I don't think that anyone I have spoken to has been surprised by what has happened.
So in terms of that, the tightening of control, and you mentioned that the Sun Jigong case in 2003 is kind of a high point. But then by 2009, we see the government of one big crackdown with Gao Zhisheng basically being abducted and being held incommunicado. Also in 2009, you see the disbarment of activist lawyers like Tang Jitian and Liu Wei. You see Su Juyong being investigated. Then in 2011, you see with the Arab Spring, we see another crackdown. And now, 2013, 2014, we are perhaps seeing some of the worst treatment of advocates. So you were talking about how some of the responses is coming from high level. I think a lot of people see these different crackdowns as separate incidents, just a knee-jerk reaction by the Chinese Communist Party. But should we see it that way, or should we see it as a larger trend?
Well, I think that it is based on a decision that, as I just said, was essentially made in 2004, that there would have to be control. And I think that that basic attitude and policy has remained the same, also before and after the some change in leadership. So I definitely think that this is part of a larger trend. I think that also the situation at the moment is worsening.
So what is it? I think we can guess what it is that the Chinese government is so afraid of, but what precisely is it? Is it the issues themselves, or is it another power base that could take away power from the party? What is that? Is it that they're so afraid of?
I think that from the perspective of the Chinese authorities, or at least from that part of the Chinese government that is entrusted with the task of stability preservation of Weiwen, it's quite clear, and perhaps it's clearer to them than to lots of people outside of China and inside China. It's quite clear that the human rights movement, of which human rights lawyers are of course an important part, stands for political ideas that challenge the party's political existence, really. And I think that of course you have a perception also amongst the establishment that the current system isn't viable unless it's somehow changed. But I think what sort of leads to this attitude of having to crack down on human rights lawyers is that essentially the establishment, the authorities, are completely reluctant to let any civil society force take control of the changes that need to be introduced. So yes, there may have to be changes, but certainly we, the party state, want to stay in control of these changes. And another way of putting the same thing, I suppose, is to say that the Qijunei forces, the system, the establishment, can't accept the idea of accountability to people outside of the system, and in a way it's not institutionally set up to accept that idea. That of course means that the notion, the idea of a political opposition, the idea of a free, open, political discussion of the grievances, popular grievances, the causes of social unrest, the various deeply contentious issues that we do have in Chinese society right now is even less acceptable.